Good morning, and welcome to yet another episode of Popping Off with Phil, the podcast. Let me tell you, Tuesday snuck up on me this week. I was getting ready, and I was like, oh my goodness, it's Tuesday. What am I going to talk about? How could I forget? This is my favorite day of the week, but you know, holidays throw you all off. Can you believe that we're already in September? Can you believe that it is already the ninth month in the year? Like, my God, like, where did the time go? I'm really working on this, and this is a revelation, as I just turned 33 last week, a week ago, that, you know, we typically live our lives in two modes. We live it in regret, or the past, or in future predictions, what's to come. And what we end up doing is we really end up being really hard on ourselves, beating ourselves up and beating ourselves down for things that we shoulda, coulda, woulda done, or things that we did do that didn't work out the way that we thought that they would or should. And then the other mode is to live in the future. You know, the present isn't going well right now, so you just throw it away and you say, well, I'll get it next week. I'll do it next month. It'll happen next year, next season, next quarter. And I'm here to tell you, because the older I get, the more I realize that time waits for no man. It constantly soldiers on. And before you know it, you'll be 33. And I had all of these, I don't want to say outrageous expectations, but I had these thoughts about what 30 would be, what it would look like, or how my 30s would start. And I'll be the first to tell you, the first 6 months of my 30s were great. You know, they started out phenomenally. But that didn't last, that euphoria of being 30 didn't last very long. And then 31 and 32 were kind of like blah, you know. There were some things, there were definitely some highlights in my life, but overall, I was just like, is this it? And so now that I'm 33, I'm really trying to focus on living and being in the present. Yes, things may not be the way that I want them to be ideally. I may not be working the job that I want to work. I may not be making the type of money I feel I should be making. But it doesn't mean that I can't live and enjoy the moments that I have. I can't afford myself the things that I can do. Maybe I can't take a trip to Europe, but I can take a trip to LA or New York or Chicago, you know. So it's just about living in that moment and still enjoying that time. But that's enough of my preaching this morning. I really had no idea what I wanted to talk about, because normally I think about segments, I think about shows, or topics that I want to talk about, like, through the week, you know. This week went by so quick, and I was overly consumed on Friday with that black-ass funeral that lasted my entire life, it seemed. But I enjoyed every moment of it. The highs, the lows, the ups and downs. Then it just totally slipped my mind. So about that black-ass funeral. So I just want to say, I think I look at death a little differently than most people. I guess I'm pragmatic even in that process of just thinking about things. Like, do I grieve? Absolutely. You know, do I feel hurt when I lose a loved one? You know, yes, sure. But I think that there's part of me that says, you know, sometimes death affords an individual a peace that life no longer can provide. And, you know, Aretha is in that situation. She was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, you know, several years ago. Had some surgeries, as far as I know, had some surgeries, probably went through some treatments or whatever, and, you know, got her strength up to a place where she was still able to perform for several years. And I think that that is amazing that she was given more time. But, you know, this last year of her life had been kind of rough, you know. And money can buy a lot of things. And sometimes it can buy us time, but it can't put off the inevitable. And I think that, you know, when someone's life work is performing, when someone's life work is singing, and they're to a point where they can't even do that anymore, you know, that's seriously debilitating. you know, to be forced into retirement. You want to retire because it's a choice that you've made and you want to enjoy it. You know, it, you can do great things in life, you know, but isn't it wonderful to not have to worry about the next job or the next gig and to be in a place where you can comfortably say, I don't have to do anything I don't want to do. I don't ever have to sing another note if I don't want to. And I think that that's something that she would have enjoyed or liked to have done. You know, I mean, to be quite honest, she probably would have performed to the end if she could. I think that the whole talk of retirement was really because her health was declining in such a way. But, you know, you want to have an opportunity to enjoy the fruits of your labor. I believe, and I learned this from my grandfather who retired after 35 years of working for Ford Motor Company, but definitely younger, 58 years old is when he retired. You know, he enjoyed his retirement. And I took a card from his book and, you know, you want to do the things that you want to do and you want to work and save and have the type of money put away so that you can do that comfortably and not have to worry about going back to work or whatever the case is, which so many people are in, that they're in that position now. Now, granted, the system has changed. My grandfather had a pension and pensions are, you know, you just don't see them as frequently as you used to. So he was good in that regard. But the point I'm trying to make is she was at a place where she could no longer do the things that she enjoyed doing. She was in a place where she wasn't able to sing. She wasn't able to talk. A lot of things are being revealed as some of her closer friends begin to talk about their last moments with her. And I just think that, you know, the pain and suffering that she dealt with both mentally and physically was subsided in death. And so, yes, sad, Aretha is going to be greatly missed, but the peace that she now feels or now has, that's something that life couldn't give her. And so because of that, I decided to take the high road or the shady road, and I pretty much just had a good time when I found out she passed. I had a good time commentating on the funeral, different things, the highs and the lows. But all the highs and the lows, I think the biggest thing is that particular service, no matter how long it was, no matter how daunting it may have seemed, was befitting of who she was and the contribution that she made to the Black community, to the world community, with her artistry. And with that, I am supremely grateful that the family even thought enough of us, us meaning the world, to share those moments with us, because they could have taken the role, like many people do, to just be like, we're gonna do this one thing and then the rest of this is ours, you know, because they have given or have allowed us access to their mother, their grandmother, their aunt, their sister, their cousin, their close family friend for years, decades. So, you know, it would not be robbery if they decided that they wanted to keep this aspect to themselves completely, totally. But they did, and I'm grateful, because otherwise I would not have so much comedy gold. But I don't want to talk about her funeral because this isn't a pop culture cast. What I do want to talk about is this reoccurring thing that I keep seeing in the lives of celebrities, namely Black celebrities. This not having a will or a trust or some document saying how you want things to be done after you pass. Now, Black ass culture is, the funeral is a big deal. And Black folks will live in squalor to save up their pennies because they want a fabulous funeral, a horse-drawn carriage. Because we, as far as I remember, as far as I can see, we believe in the funeral. You know, no, I don't want to be cremated. I want to be laid out, spread out. I want to wear this. I want to look like this. I want this to be done. And we will invest the time and the energy in making sure that our funerals are productions, but not invest the time and energy to make sure that our affairs are in order. I'll tell you firsthand, when my mother passed away almost 5 years ago, she wasn't working. She was unable to work because of a myriad of health concerns. We were in the process of applying for disability. She had been denied we were in the appeal process. And to be honest, even working in the field that I work in, I had insurance. I didn't even think that, oh, maybe she doesn't have insurance. Maybe I should get insurance. How do I go about getting insurance? Because she did have health concerns. And a lot of times when you're applying for health insurance or for life insurance, I'm sorry, you know, they do all of these assessments. And she wasn't in the greatest of health. So, you know, on the back end, or now that I'm thinking about it, you know, maybe she wouldn't have been eligible, or we wouldn't have qualified for any coverage. But still, you know, the process eluded me. And she passed, and we didn't have anything in place, and she didn't have any in place. And I, like I said, I should have known that she did not have anything in place, but I didn't. And I was left kind of holding my head in my hand and having to go out and ask people. I didn't do a GoFundMe. I did a You Caring profile, but it's very similar to a GoFundMe account, where it's like soliciting the help of individuals because you have a need that you need to fulfill. I was fortunate. I am loved. She was loved, and I was able to raise money to provide her a service that I thought was fitting of her life. I had to make some choices. I had to cremate my mother. That was the most economical choice. I wrestled with that. I wrestle with that from time to time, because it's something that no one else in my family that I know of has done. Everybody has been buried. But I was disinterested, not interested, uninterested, whatever prefix you want to use, in being saddled with debt in relation to a burial. I made some choices that probably were a little bit more costly. I still probably could have cut corners, but it is what it is. But what I learned from that experience is that ain't the way to be, you know? If you're in relatively good health, there are options for people who aren't in great health for some type of health of life insurance. We as a community really need to start having that conversation. And I think we have to start dispelling this myth that people are only interested in having policies on people because they want to acquire some type of large or massive large wealth off of a person's death. They want to make this large profit, and that's not the case. The reality is, we want to be able to, at the bare minimum, take care of your funeral expenses without having to rob Peter to pay Paul, and then having to borrow, beg, and steal to ensure that you have at least a decent burial, you know. And I also will say that, and I know this might sound crazy to a lot of people, but life insurance policies, in terms of being a person who is African American, is probably one of the best ways to begin creating some type of generational wealth in our community. I don't work in life insurance personally, on the life insurance side, but I know that my company definitely pays out on policies on a regular basis. And a lot of those policies are uncontested. So we're talking, but I do work on the investment side. So I see a lot of people reinvesting or investing proceeds, life proceeds. Whether that's life proceeds from our company or life proceeds from other companies, people are in positions where they can invest $400,000 or $500,000 that they have off life insurance policies. This is money that they can invest. So this is money that they don't need. This is money that they've paid their bills, they've settled their debts, they've purchased homes, they've done whatever it is, they've renovated homes, they've done whatever it is they need to do. And this is legitimately what we would call discretionary income that they can put away for the purpose of having at a later date. And those are the types of things that help to build that concept of generational wealth. I have friends who've lost parents, who've left money that's allowed them or afforded them the opportunity to purchase their first home because they had enough money for down payment. It's allowed them to you know, buy their car outright so they don't have to deal with that. Or to buy a new car or a used car where they don't have a note. Buy something in cash. Like, it's allowed them to pay off credit card debt. It's allowed them to renovate their homes. So that process of having a policy in place where you can take care of the expenses of your loved one and whatever they may have left behind that needs to be done. And then also having some money left over to feed into your life, feed into your family. I think it's a concept we really need to buy into. And Aretha Franklin is maybe the third or fourth star celebrity who has passed away who has a large amount of money and other things, you know, not just cash value, but musical wealth, other material wealth in terms of like furs, jewelry, and costumes over here. All of these things are things of value that we got, her family has to shuffle through, or their estate has to figure out before anybody gets what they need. Obviously from her funeral, we know that she was really big on education. She was really, it was really important to her to support her family in their pursuit of higher education. But that was her dream. And although her children may honor her dream, you know, that's a, you know, you never know what people do when they come into money. Because let's be real, Aretha Franklin may have been worth $80 million, but her family's not worth $80 million. So they may have had certain luxuries afforded to them because their mother was who she was. But they've never had that type of money before. So there's no reason to assume that they're going to, and I'm putting this in air quotes, honor their mother's legacy by carrying on in the things that she did. They may not give money to civil rights activists, because we still have them. You know, they may not support those causes. They may not put aside money for other family members to go to college. They may only focus on their family. And so if she would have had those things in place, those things written down, I want money from this particular trust to go towards making sure that members of the Franklin family are allowed to pursue higher education without any cost to them. Because there's no guarantee that people in her family are going to carry on that legacy now that she's gone. And on the small scale, like if you honestly, if you juxtapose black and brown families versus white families, a lot of my counterparts, my contemporaries, white individuals who are my age, come out of college with no debt, school or credit or credit card debt. They have no student loan debt. They have no credit card debt. They have no student loan debt because, and I don't want to, I think we put a lot of emphasis on the fact there's scholarships and there's free money. Yes, all this is true. But don't assume that because these white boys and white girls are coming out of school without any debt that they had scholarship money. That's not necessarily the case. Maybe they could go to state schools. They could go to their parents. There could be other things that attribute to the fact that they don't have debt. But let's just leave it at this. They don't have any debt. And we'll just assume for the sake of this conversation that they don't have any debt because the debt of their education was consumed by their parents. So that means where I graduate from college and I land a $40,000, $50,000 job with $60,000 worth of debt, they land that same job with zero debt. So they're already in a better position. They're in a better position to save because within the first 5 years, if you look at the difference, they probably purchased a home. They probably bought a new car. They probably even got married and started a family. And so just because they have these things in place, these mechanisms in place, they're able to afford their children a better head start than we are. They're not, their parents are giving them money for their homes, you know, for down payments on their homes. Their parents are, I have a friend of a friend whose car went down. Her parents were like, oh, just take our old Lexus. We're in the market for a new one. It's paid for. You know, so it's just these things. And a lot of it is not because these people are extremely wealthy, have a lot of money. Sometimes their parents may not even be college educated. something as simple as a life insurance policy that their mother and or father are both had in place. When they passed away, they left their kids a couple hundred thousand dollars to handle things. But it's also money that comes to them tax-free that they can use to better their family situation. And I just think that our community doesn't have that conversation often enough. We don't talk about it often enough because there's this misnomer that is literally just to make this particular person rich, that this person is going to be living this high life. And that's not necessarily the case, but it does allow an individual to set themselves up and their family up in a better situation. So my takeaway from that whole situation is the importance of putting our family affairs in order. It doesn't take a lot to sit down with someone to talk about estate planning and what's next and what is it that I need to do. You know, it's a hard conversation, I know, because I've had to have it, and I still need to have it with some individuals about what do you want done? How do you want this to work? Because nobody wants to talk about death. But it's better to have the conversation when we can talk about it, as opposed to me having to make choices and decisions at a later date that we didn't discuss, or not being able to make the choices and the decisions that I would like to make because I don't have the means to do it. So I admonish all of you who are listening to have these conversations with your loved ones, with your parents, with your aunts and uncles, with your grandparents, you know, anybody that you may be responsible for. Find out where, if they have policies in place, where they're located. You know, sit down and talk about what it is that they want or desire. You know, what it is they want you to do. And see, you know, what adjustments you need to make. Do we need to increase this policy? Do we need to decrease this policy? Do we need to add an additional policy for other things? But you just don't want to be left in situations where you are having to foot a bill that you can't afford, or you're having to go through the courts and the estate making all of these things very public that could have been handled privately had you had the conversation and done the proper preparation beforehand. Funeral pre-planning, you know, going through the process of purchasing plots and paying on that now so that it isn't such a large expense on the family when you're gone. You know, and this is especially for people who may not have children. Because, you know, your good cousin or your favorite niece or nephew doesn't have any legal claim to anything that belongs to you because they aren't your child. Or they aren't they aren't your spouse. You know, if you pass away and you don't have any children, you don't have a spouse, in most instances, all of your assets are divided amongst your siblings, you know? And whether these are siblings you know or siblings you don't know, they have a legal claim to that. So you just want to make sure that all of those things are taken care of so that you don't handicap the person who's left behind to deal with the aftermath of your passing and all that encompasses. So that's my lecture today. I hope you guys had a wonderful, wonderful Labor Day weekend. I know I did. 3 days off is always great. Tuesday's probably going to be a little rough, so prepare yourself. That day after the holiday, you're always a little sluggish. And even though it's a Tuesday, it's going to feel like Monday. But just get through it. It's a 4-day work week, and we're grateful for that. Please continue to listen, continue to subscribe, continue to share. I'm on a number of different platforms. So trust me, there's a way for you to hear this. There's a way for you to share this, whether you have an iPhone or a Android phone. If you don't have any phone, I can't help you. But as long as you have one of those devices, an iPad, a tablet, there's a way to access this particular podcast. I love you for supporting me. I'm trying to figure out how to take this thing to the next level. Based on my commentary and the responses I got from my commentary, I really should be famous. And so this is one of the avenues that I think could get me there. So again, I love you for your support. Thank you for being a wonderful co-host. And I will talk to you guys later. Peace.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.